Welcome to Ashes and Aftermath. I'm your host, Brandon Holder, and today's guest is someone who proves that you don't need a perfect past to build a powerful future. Steve Gamblin is a motivational speaker, humorist, and the creator of Vision Board Mastery. But his journey didn't start on a stage. It started in real life with setbacks, self-doubt, and moments where quitting would have been the easy choice. Steve blends honesty, humor, and practical tools to help people see their lives differently, and more importantly, take action towards a life they actually want. This is a conversation about resilience, rebuilding, and learning how to visualize your way forward, even when you've hit rock bottom. Please welcome Steve Gamblin. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Glad to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. I am too. You're a former radio personality, turned motivational speaker, known for your blending of humor and real world personal development, and creator of Vision Board Mastery.
Absolutely. It's been a long, interesting journey, and as I like to share, with a lot of crashes and burns in between that set me up for the next phase.
I can definitely understand that wholeheartedly. For listeners that are new to your work, how do you describe what you do and what drives your mission?
I describe myself as back to basics, positivity, motivation, inspiration, visualization, and doing my best to help people understand personal development so they can put it into action in their own lives. Because there's too many people doing the rah, 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 buy my stuff, woo, woo approach. So I refer to my style as blue collar woo, meaning I'll explain how it works, hand you the tools, we'll roll up our sleeves, and we'll do something together to create some success for you, whatever that looks like in your life.
Where did that begin? Where did you start? Where did you see yourself getting into that role, that motivational, I guess, motivational speaker? What were the turning points for that?
Yeah, it actually all started when I was 11 years old. I wanted to be a radio DJ, a stand-up comedian, an author of my own books, and a teacher of people, but not necessarily in a classroom. I just liked to help other people understand stuff and feel good about themselves. And when I was 11, I had an English teacher named Mrs. Farron who actually encouraged me to help other students if I got my work done early. So fast forward through a 10-year radio career, 28 and a half years as a wedding and corporate event DJ, 7 years of stand-up comedy, and now 22 years of speaking. I love helping people to understand something that they can use to create happiness, joy, or success in their lives. And it's just at such a blue collar from the heart level that everything I've done has just kind of gravitated and kept me in that line with the same approach and the same reason why, no matter what I've ever done, I just wanted to create value for other people.
That's cool. That's cool. So the crash and burns that you've had to go through to get to where you are, I know there's a lot of people that, myself included, we find ourselves sometimes in the thick of it, up to our necks. And sometimes we ask ourselves, where do we turn? Where did you find your inspiration to break through? You were radio DJ to get to where you are. You have to start at the bottom. Not always, but you have to start small. You have to start, and that's what I've been doing. And so at some point in time, you crashed and burned, maybe a few times. There were some moments that you probably felt like, my goodness, damn, I'm hurting. What were those moments like for you?
The biggest one happened in the early 2000s, and it was at the tail end of my radio career. And in a very short window of time, I managed to be so frustrated with my life that I walked away from a successful radio career without a full-time job. I only had my little part-time weekend DJ business at the time. My first marriage was already unraveling a bit, and so that went away. And any shred of financial stability I'd had up to that point was completely gone, and I was about $62,000 in debt all around age 35. And I wound up crashing at my dad's house for a while, where we had just built a recording studio in an office in his basement. So he said, hey, you know, while you're looking for an apartment, why don't you just crash here until you find something better? So it actually, what I felt was the biggest failure of my life and feeling like the biggest loser in the world, it turned out to be, at rock bottom, a really solid place to rebuild my foundation, because my dad's health was starting to fail. So me being there was actually an asset to be able to help him out. So that worked out well for that. It also gave me space and a little time to put my own confidence back together and figure out what I wanted to do. And in August of 2003, very low point still, brutally self-deprecating. My self-talk was horrible. If I looked in the mirror, I was pretty much just giving myself the finger verbally every day, saying what an idiot I was. And on my way home from a meeting, I stopped at this little mini golf place that had a driving range. And for $3, I got a big bucket of golf balls and went to the farthest tee box in the property because I didn't want to dent anybody's car because I'm a terrible golfer. So there I am up against the plastic netting underneath this long row of steel-towered power lines. And I'm just smacking the crap out of these golf balls, taking it all out on myself, my frustrations and everything that I created. And in the middle of it, a thunderstorm came through. So I'm standing there barefoot in the wet grass under steel-towered power lines in a thunderstorm, pouring rain and wind and thunder and lightning and everything. And at one point, I just held the club up and I just swung it around slowly and just being sarcastic, I said, go ahead. I dare you. Go ahead. Take your best shot. And I kept hitting all my golf balls. And then as I finished, it was still raining, and there were two full buckets of golf balls just a couple of stalls away from two guys who ran from the storm and never came back. So I hit theirs. So after an hour of hitting golf balls in a thunderstorm, I got back to my car, and when I opened the door, the rain stopped, and the sun just started to just crack through a couple of the dark clouds. You know, see those little rays of light. I just thought that was funny. Like, it waited till I was done and out of danger, and then the rain and the thunder stopped. And the next day I was on a phone call with a brand new life coach I just started working with. And he asked, how was your week? And as funny and really self-deprecating as I could make it, I told him the story of that hour. And at the end of my little story, he was laughing real hard, which is something you shouldn't do when your client's life sucks. But he was laughing and he said, I got two questions for you. Are you this open and honest about your life with everybody? I said, yeah, pretty much. And he asked, have you ever thought of being a motivational speaker or a stand-up comedian? I think you'd enjoy both. And he didn't know those were two of my four things when I was 11. But at age 35, he heard that in the way that I was talking and how I was trying to provide value and guidance for others, the way I shared my story. And he saw the kernel of something there. And 2 weeks later, I was in my first comedy class. And a week after that, my first Toastmasters meeting. And here we are.
Wow. So how did humor and resilience and the self-awareness, how did that pull you through?
I've always used humor. I got that from my dad, and I've always been a storyteller. And just, you know, humor was never to me about telling jokes. It was just about explaining something and how something happened and maybe how I was putting my life back together, but using it in such a humorous way that it wasn't this, oh, hey, I'm high and mighty and great and better than you. It was, hey, look, I did something really stupid. And then I did this other thing that I thought would fix it. And that was kind of stupid too. But then I kept going and then I did this. And all of a sudden I got my foot like up on the next ledge and I got a little better and a little better and a little better. And then I found I was actually climbing toward what I felt success would be for me. You know, I'm picking my mountaintops and then picking the trails and working my way up. And I might just happen to meet some really funny people on the way and have a few weird things happen, but those became some of the stories that I still tell on stage now that other people, even years after they've seen me on stage, have quoted back to me if we happen to run into each other or if they're reached out. So I learned really early that humor is a great way to teach things and have it be more memorable.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. I had a lot of that growing up and in my life. Later on, even in college, I had a really wacky professor that was, I laughed every day. But I'll tell you what, he was there when no one else would be there. And I think about that. He had his own seasons of changed. I believe he was in a divorce, but no one worked harder to tutor at, he would do several, anything from the basic mathematics all the way up to like calculus. He would tutor at the same time, several people in this common area. And I was like, what an interesting, it was kind of a mission. Where did you find the strengths in those seasons, you know, where things would fail? Because I got to imagine stand-up comedy, which I tried once. That's rough. That is tough. For me, I was so sensitive. I couldn't pull myself to do it again. And I wish I had, but that's a me thing that I'm working on. So did you find that it was really difficult when you started stand-up comedy? I imagine you probably had moments where you were like, why am I doing this? Or, wow, this is tough. And what pulled out? But how long did that take? A while? That's another question that stems from that.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely took a while because the first time I was on stage, I don't even remember it. And somewhere there's a VHS videotape because this was, you know, the early 2000s. We still had that. It was tough. But what actually kept me going is even if I was bombing or tanking, you do that one thing and you hear that one person laugh. And you know that you impacted just one person. And sometimes you reach out and you find that person after the show and say, hey, thank you so much for being the laugh, you know, that punctuated the entire set in my time on stage. And I loved to talk to people and talk to them after the shows and just to be a person who loved to have conversations and was very grateful for even the tiniest glimmer of what could be construed as success. Or even more important, not so much success, but a connection with somebody, which is what I love most about speaking as well. It's not about delivering perfectly. It's about having impact. And if you can impact somebody in a positively emotional way, that's a really good thing. So as tough as it was, and as many times as I tanked on stage, which was plenty, I've had bad moments in speaking as well over the years. But the thing is, if you make that one connection and you find out what it is and how you said it, that had a positive reaction for somebody, you can repeat it and hope there's somebody just like them in the next audience. And often there was. So those are the little golden pieces that I would pick up along the way to keep me going. Now, I've had a couple of events where I said early on, oh my gosh, that was horrible. I'd never want to speak in front of an audience again. And I almost shut down my business a couple times in the early days. And then somebody would reach out. You know, there are angels everywhere. Somebody would reach out and say, hey, Steve, I saw you on an event a few weeks ago. I've been meaning to reach out to you, but I just forgot all about it until today. Hey, I just want to let you know, when you said this and you shared this story and you had this picture on the screen and they could quote it back verbatim, I just want to let you know that I took that lesson, that advice, I applied it in my life, and this good thing happened. So, hey, keep on going. I'd love to see you again sometime. Those angels showed up. Always at just the right time to help me remember why I do what I do the way I do it, which is different from what a lot of people are like out there. We all have our own reasons. But it reminded me of my why at a time when I doubted it and I was ready to just walk away from it. So those little crashes and burns and those moments of doubt, there's always an angel out there that reaches out at just the right time. And I'm so appreciative and grateful for when that happens.
That's incredible. That is incredible. And when I hear that, it brings some things, and it brings some things back to my memory. So when did you start doing vision boards?
That was pretty early on in my personal development, where I was still working with that one life coach. This is around 2004, 2005. And he said, you know, I really love the way you talk about personal development and all these things. And he said, have you ever heard of The Secret, which had just come out on DVD at the time? And I said, well, I've heard about it, Law of Attraction stuff. He said, yeah, go check out the DVD. I think you'd really enjoy the viewpoints of some of the people in it. And he was right. I watched that DVD every Sunday night for about 9 weeks in a row. And I kept coming back to this one guy named John Assaraf. And John's basic message was, he was talking about how he was building these things called vision boards. And I'd never really heard of the concept. And he had a picture of one of his, and it had, you know, it was mostly material stuff. It was like a mansion and a car and a big honking gold watch and all that stuff. And he was talking about the materialistic end of it. And I was starting to think, well, why couldn't I use that to improve my entire life, which at the time was a steaming, you know, pile of dog crap on the sidewalk, divorced and broke and all of that. And so I just started in a very rudimentary way, finding pictures. And I still have every vision board I ever made. And I have those couple of early ones. And I made the mistake of a whole bunch of material things. And about 2 weeks later, I looked at the board and went, ugh, this doesn't even fire me up. So I made another one that impacted all areas of my life. And I found a thing called the life wheel that had 8 spokes with things like physical health, emotional well-being, relationships, your core values, your faith, your connection to people in real ways, and then your career and your money. And I found out when I started setting at least one goal in every area for 1 year, not 20-year goals, 1 year. If it's a longer term goal, what's 1 year's worth of progress? The wheel started to turn and knocked a lot of the rust off, and my gears started going, and I started taking better care of myself, and I started to see more wins. And as I did that, of course, I would share it because social media was just starting to come in right around there. I would share these wins and I was celebrating all these things. And then other people started to say, hey, Steve, I love how you're doing that. Hey, can you teach me how to do that? And that's when I started to do events, and that's where I eventually created Vision Board Mastery, which is now early 2026 will be rebranded as Ultimate Life Vision. So it's progressed over the years how I teach it, and it's become such a structured path of how I do it that's very different from so many other people. It's not just an arts and crafts project. So it started with me, again, completely messing up my life. And then taking a few first wrong steps to fix it, and then correcting myself, and then finding something that resonated with me. And now I get to teach other people how to do it.
That's an incredible story. What's the most surprising thing you've seen in your life that's manifested through your process?
Number one is the relationship I got to have with the most amazing, beautiful soulmate I could ever have imagined, who I built. I built our relationship on vision boards over a couple of years. And here's how it manifested. In January of 2007, I told myself, this is the year that I will meet her, whoever she is. I'd been divorced several years at that point. And I've been building the vision of my ultimate dream relationship. And I would put pictures of couples on my vision board, holding hands, walking on a beach, holding hands at the railing of a ship at sunset on a cruise, laughing together in their kitchen, making dinner together, and things like that. Cause I'm a hopeless, helpless romantic. And that's the relationship I wanted to have. So in January of 07, I said to myself, this will be the year. And in early June of 07, I wrote in my journal, I am ready to fall in love, which is basically cueing the universe. Okay, if you send this person now, I'm going to be a lot more aware of the signs around me, that I'm not just staring at my shoes or my phone. I'm open to this happening. So now my senses will be heightened, looking around and being aware. And about a week later, on June 16th, I got an email from someone named Tina. And I opened it, but I didn't read it. And I almost deleted it because I thought it was spam. And then I checked it again later. And it was a girl I'd gone to high school with that I haven't seen or spoken to in 21 years, who, according to that email, was now living in Florida and just happened to see my name online. And she reached out and said, hey, we should keep in touch. And I emailed back. She sent me her phone number. And I called her a few days after that. First words out of her mouth in 21 years. It's about time you called. And I just remembered, oh my gosh, beautiful, funny, sarcastic, smart. And over the course of the next month, she wouldn't send me a picture of herself and she didn't have a social media footprint. So there was no, I could Google her name all day long. There was no pictures that were going to show up. We're texting and emailing and calling. And I'm starting to remember I had a crush on this girl in high school for 3 years, never asked her out. And on July 21st, she sent me a text while I was DJing at a wedding. Hey, can I tell you something if you promise not to freak out? And I said, sure. And she typed 143. And I had to Google it real quick. Thank God I had Wi-Fi. And it's text code for I love you. And I texted her back, I love you too. And about a month after that, she flew up to New Hampshire because her grandmother was having surgery. And I met her at the airport. And I got to lay eyes on her for the first time in 21 years and fell in love with her all over again. And we enjoyed 6,386 days in love, 17 and a half years, until unfortunately she passed away unexpectedly last December. So that was the biggest manifestation. I mean, there have been so many things, but that is the one that just changed my life forever and gave me the happiest 17 and a half years of my life.
That's amazing. So I imagine you've used laughter as kind of a bridge through the difficult times, this being definitely being one of them. So why do you think humor works so well as a bridge when you're to cross from these difficult moments to the end of the light at the end of the tunnel, I guess.
Yeah. As somebody who's dealt with depression on and off throughout my life, humor and laughter is what's kept me going and saved my butt so many times over the years by not choosing to sit and cocoon in something. And that used to be my thing. I used to say, well, no, I'll deal with it. And I knew, I mean, when Tina passed, we were on vacation in England. We had just arrived one day prior to her passing. We were supposed to be there for 6 days. So I was alone, shaking and shattered for 5 days. And I said, look, I knew by the second day, I could not cocoon on this. If I wanted to survive this, I had to reach out. I had to connect with people. I had to find people in a grief support group. I was already looking them up by the third day. And I also knew that humor was going to get me through. So I started to just think of all the greatest memories we had together. And I would see things that would show up in people, in circumstances, even while I was walking down the sidewalk like a zombie in England. I would see little things that made me smile and made me think of Tina and made me think of some of our funniest memories together. So I felt so connected with her. And even though I was grieving, and I mean, my heart was in a million pieces, I would see these little reminders and it would make me think of something during our relationship that I absolutely loved about her. And what I started to also do was share those stories. I've been on more than a dozen grief-related podcasts since then, since I got back home. And sharing the greatest, loving, funniest, most beautiful moments of our lives together has been such a huge help. And, you know, Tina had a wonderful sense of humor. She was so sweet and she was funny, although she was a lot more shy about sharing stories and stuff. But every time I laugh and share a story, I always say this when I'm on a show. I said, somewhere right now in heaven, there is a beautiful blue-eyed angel rolling her eyes because I'm sharing one of our stories. And anybody who knew Tina goes, oh my gosh, Olympic gold medal caliber eye roller. And then they laugh and I laugh. And that has helped me heal so much by honoring her and our greatest memories by sharing them. And what I've also heard from people is how much it's helped them in their relationships by remembering to notice the joyful moments and remember them and to not get bogged down in what's the energy of the world so much, but to remember this is your foundation. Find the best in each other every day and support each other and love on each other and care about each other. So the humor has been a great way for me to share on and off stage, on and off camera, on and off microphones, the joy and what I love most about being with Tina. I mean, we were together over 6,000 days. I probably got about 20,000 great memories to share.
I bet you do. So you encourage people to be good in the world. What does that look like in everyday life?
Do your best every interaction, whether it's in person, on the phone, in email, in a text, on social media, wherever you are, ask yourself the next time you have an interaction with somebody else, did I just leave a plus sign or a minus sign trailing behind me? Because we both know that there are people who make rooms brighter every time they walk in. And there are also people that we know who every time they show up, they walk in a room, they walk in a store, they jump into a conversation, they are just a human minus sign. They are just whining and complaining and causing chaos and drama and stirring up garbage with people. And they just come and they stomp all over other people's dreams and they just bring negativity and darkness wherever they go. And it's by choice. I get it. Not everybody has an easy life. But we have a choice every day of the attitude that we bring to any conversation or interaction. So I encourage people to ask themselves, did I just leave a plus sign or a minus sign behind me? And take a good, honest look. If they got to talk to themselves in a mirror, do that. But I had a corporate event recently that I spoke at. And a week later, the HR director sent me a message and said, Steve, I have never heard so many people being aware of the energy in this building as since we heard you speak. We've had people leave sticky notes to thank people, and it just says thank you, and it has a plus sign on it. They said people are actively and intentionally bringing better attitudes to the workplace, and that also includes dealing with their clients. They're a chain of banks here in the Northeast. And they said the energy that even when the clients are walking in the door, our people are greeting them with more plus signs than ever before. And I love that because it just helps. It helps you personally and professionally, and it helps the culture of any group, organization, or association. So ask yourself, did I just drop a plus sign or a minus sign? Here's the best thing about plus signs. I own the factory. I will never run out. I'm going to keep making them every day. I got better output than those elves that live in the trees making Keebler cookies. My factory is going to keep going forever.
That's cool. I'd never looked at it like that. And I know there are times when I know that me personally, I have some pluses I need to be manufacturing myself. So that'll have an effect on me just hearing that and a lot of people that are listening. Yeah, that hits home. It hits home. So for people that are struggling with life, what's a mindset tool that you can offer, to change their direction just for today?
Yeah, it can feel like a snowball some days careening down a hill. I mean, here in New England, when we were kids, we'd find a hill, and when we got sticky snow, we'd start rolling a snowball, and it would get bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally you'd push it, and it would thunder down the hill getting bigger and getting harder to stop. And that's the way it can be with energy sometimes. When you start to notice all the negativity around you and you kind of get like the snowball ran over you and it takes you with it, here's something I recommend. And this is an exercise that I do with a lot of my clients. At the end of the day, or when you first begin your day, whichever one helps you more, think of your favorite conversation you got to have with somebody that day in a positive way. Think of a way that you got to help somebody or somebody got to help you. Think of an act of kindness you got to do, or maybe a little quick act of kindness somebody did for you. What was the most beautiful thing you saw that you have in your memory for that day? So out of all the minus signs that might be swirling around you, and if your tendency is to notice the negative, what was that one really shiny good thing that made you feel good and it impacted your day in a positive way? Write it down. Put pen to paper. Don't text it to yourself. Put pen or pencil or crayon or a Sharpie or a highlighter or something to paper. Because when you write things, you're engaging both halves of your brain and it increases memory and retention. So even if you have a little notebook where each day you write down just one thing you're grateful for, one thing you noticed, what was the biggest plus sign that you experienced that day? Maybe it was the most incredible sunrise and you were out early and you got to see it and you looked around and there was nobody else around and you thought, oh my gosh, I got to see this beautiful, amazing sunrise. Write that down. And when you start to stack those things up, I've been keeping gratitude journals for 14 and a half years. And each morning I write down my favorite three moments from the previous day. And it's never broad brushed. It's always something very, very specific. And it's pretty incredible because you start to notice, it's like you're putting bricks in a foundation. Okay, here's one. You're standing there holding a rock. Well, when you do that long enough and you start to see how these things stack up and how many you actually have and what a solid foundation you can create below your feet to stand on, it's a pretty incredible, powerful thing, because if you do it correctly, you can look back on something a year, 10 years from now. And if you explained it in such a way that you can emotionally tap back into the moment, you can re-experience the positive emotions, which of course leads to endorphins and chemicals in your blood. You can almost recreate it and relive it in the moment. So would you rather do that with positive stuff? Or be like those minus sign people that you say, okay, what went wrong today? And they go, oh my gosh, you think your life is terrible. And they rattle off 10 negative things. It's like a toilet just swirling when you get a bunch of people around in a circle doing that. So I choose the positive and I stack them up. And I, even on the worst days of my life, I've still found something to be grateful for, because I get challenged on that sometimes. And people say, well, Steve, the day Tina died, you could not have possibly had something to be grateful for. And I say, actually, I did. As tough as it is, she had heart disease and she had had an episode and collapsed in our hotel room while I was out of the room. I was down at the gym and I came back up right after it had happened. She still had a pulse. So myself and a hotel staff employee with medical training worked to revive her until the EMTs got there, and she passed literally in my arms with me crying all over her, telling her I love her. I'm grateful for that. And I hope the last thing she ever heard was me saying, I love you. So I'm grateful for that little tiny moment of the worst day of my life.
Wow. That's amazing. That's so impactful. There are similar things that people are listening to this are going through, similar, maybe even harder moments that you know, it's hard to fathom. But it sounds like you did the best you could. And in that moment, that definitely is a positive to say, yeah, you were there with her. And I'm sure she knew. I'm sure she was very grateful for that as well. I'm I know that the spiritual world is more than what we can see. And yeah, and they're there and they know when we're talking about them. I just know it. So for people that are able to dig out of their moments of despair and get those plus sides going, why do so many people fail at goal setting when they've picked up the pieces and they started out? What is it that gets in the way?
We actually conducted a survey a couple of years back with one of my old business coaches and mentors, and we asked questions of people who were either writing down their goals or had tried vision boards or visualization with their goals. And we found out pretty quickly three of the biggest reasons why people felt they had failed. Number one, and 60% of people admitted this, and they could pick more than one. So you're going to see the high percentages here. 60% of people said that they failed to achieve what they set out to because they never took action, which is basically the equivalent of somebody sitting on their couch watching Powerball hit $2 billion and sitting there saying, I want to be rich. I want to be rich. I want to be rich, as though they're manifesting it. And yet when their friend says, well, did you buy a ticket? They go, nah, I didn't bother. I wouldn't win anyway. So it's saying you want something, but then not even taking the most basic step of getting, you know, your butt cheeks and your couch cushions to get a divorce and go buy a ticket. So that was 60% of people admitted that. 47% of people admitted that they didn't know exactly what they wanted, which is what I see a lot with vision boards, is people who put together what I call the vision board starter kit, because they saw some motivational speaker's video saying, this is what success is. They put on a Lamborghini, a yacht, a mansion, a private jet, you know, the big gold and jewel encrusted watch and a bank vault full of gold bars and pallets of cash, because somebody told them that's what success was. And then a little while later, kind of like with those first two materialistic vision boards I made, just not inspired by them, because it's just not what you really want. Even if you don't know exactly what you want, you know, you're really not interested in pursuing this. And then about a third of people said they couldn't overcome their own doubts, self-doubt, their fears, and their bad habits that they developed. They were just kind of stuck in these patterns of bad habit, like not eating well or smoking or drinking too much or not exercising or whatever. And they were having a tough time getting back onto the right track to pursue their goals. They were just kind of caught up with these behavior patterns. Now, each one of those is very significant. And if you have multiples of them, you're totally screwed right out of the gate, because you're fighting a losing battle. First off, by not even knowing what you want. And second, by not taking action or still doing all the wrong actions because of your habits. And it's so common. And that's why the way that I teach this, we work through all those things. Before you ever pick a picture, I take people through a number of exercises and mindset reminders and stories and lessons to say that whatever you put on your vision board should resonate with you in your heart and in your mind and your soul and in your gut before you ever slap a picture on a board. You know, it's 10 steps in my process. You don't gather pictures till step 7. Everything else is inside work that too many other people don't even realize is critical to the process.
Wow. So what's the most powerful story you've witnessed from the vision board mastery process?
Yeah, that would be a coaching client that I refer to as Giraffrica Jen. And Jen works for a company that I've spoken for. Actually, I spoke for them last week. So this January would be my 18th year working directly with this particular company. And about 8 years ago, she came to me after one of the events and said, okay, Steve, I got this big goal, but I didn't quite know how to go about it. Now, she had all of her other goals for parts of her life. And she was about 30 at the time and said, I want to go on a safari in Africa because I love giraffes and I would love to see one up close in its native land, you know, out on the Serengeti as part of one of those safari tours. So I said, okay, how much is it going to cost? She said, I have no idea. I said, well, go find out. So she called the travel agent. She called me back. She said, about $10,000. I said, okay. In addition to paying your bills and growing your business and supporting all of your other goals, how long do you think it would take you to bank that money? And she figured 2 years. I said, okay, now we're starting to develop this, a timeline. And also, you know the cost. So you know how much extra and how much you have to grow your business. And I was thinking giraffe, Africa. So I truncated them and put them together and came up with hashtag Giraffrica. And all of my clients, they wind up with a hashtag or a nickname or some word that helps keep them fired up. So she became known as Giraffrica Jen. I encouraged her inside of her private Facebook group with the clients and team members to start talking about the Africa trip and how much she loved giraffes. People started sending her pen sets that had jungle animals on them. One was a giraffe necklace, earrings, jewelry. Somebody sent her a giraffe postcard. I found a bathtub sticker of a mama and a baby giraffe standing next to each other. She put that up in her shower. So she saw it every day whenever she took a shower, and she would put her hand on the giraffes and imagine herself there. There's a radio station here in the Northeast, and every Friday, and I have no idea why they do this, around 6:30 in the morning, they would have a song contest. And afterward, they would always play Africa by Toto. So she listened to that every Friday morning. And on Friday night, she would give an update to her Facebook group, how much money she had saved. And then we created a tracking device. I found a page from a kid's coloring book that had a giraffe on it and had 12 spots. So I put her name and her then boyfriend's name in two spots, and then 500, 500, 500, 500, 500, 500, 500, one for each of the 2 years. And every time she banked $500, she would go do a Facebook Live and color in the spot. And she made it in, I think it was 2 years and about 2.5 months, she banked the final amount. And people were celebrating her up and down. They're sending giraffe videos and pictures. And because she had that vision, but then shared it with everybody around her and kept at it, and the consistency and taking action, accountability and tracking and having to grow her business, she was ranked 20-something in the company in sales when we first had that conversation. Within 2 years, she was number 2 in the company in sales. She more than tripled her business. And this is also right about when the pandemic happened. Now, they're a company based on in-person events, in-home parties and expos and things like that. She had to switch over to virtual, and she still tripled her business in 2 years. And the trip has gotten bumped number of times because of the pandemic and some unrest over there where she was planning to go. But she did it, and we still celebrate it. And I still call her Giraffrica Jen. I just checked in with her the other day to see how she was doing, and I sent her a little gif of a giraffe, which she always loves. So that has been my favorite. That has been the biggest, wildest ride. And it was such a joy to coach her through that process. She did an amazing job.
Well, congratulations to her on making that happen. And you helped her. You definitely helped her find that extra drive, that extra push to get to where she needed to be. That's awesome. Yeah. So if you could go back to your younger self, what's one message that you would give your younger self?
This is the same one I've been using for a long time now, and I don't think it'll ever change. Three simple words. Always remember Tina. Remember that girl I had a crush on in high school, how sweet she was, and how pretty she was, and how amazing she was. And that's the one I've been using since the day I reconnected with Tina. People say, what would you tell your younger self? Always remember Tina. And kind of now that she has passed, it's more so than ever. Those are the words that if I was 80 today and could speak to my 57-year-old self, I would say again, always remember Tina.
That's cool. That is very cool. So let us know, let listeners know what you're working on right now. Speaking, coaching, or board programs, vision board programs.
Yeah. Getting back out on stages, which I've already started doing. recent corporate keynote, getting back out there for corporate clients. And we are working on a brand new website, which I got the update the other day. It should be launched within early 2026 at the latest. And rebranding Vision Board Mastery, and it's currently being re-scripted and re-recorded as Ultimate Life Vision. So that's going to be relaunching soon. So as difficult as this past year has been, a phrase I use a lot, it's one of my stage stories. Some days your phoenix rides a pogo stick, and every once in a while you get pushed back down into the ashes, which is where I've been the past year, but where we're going to bounce back higher and better. And when those tail feathers grow back, they're going to be brighter and more vivid, and I'll be able to fly higher. So we're right now in the process of bouncing back out of the ashes again to not only get back to where the business was, but to be even better for everything I've gone through. So there's a lot coming in 2026. And my number one words are be lean and flexible physically and business-wise. All I want to do is speak, write, and coach. And I've filled in all the other slots of everybody I need around me, built the best team I've ever had around me. And we're all ready to just show the world what everything I've gone through, everything I've learned from it, and even more ways to be able to help other people get through what might be impacting their lives.
Awesome. Where can people connect with you and learn more about your programs?
You can find me online. My website is stevegamlinspeaker.com. And I'm very active on Facebook and LinkedIn. If you just look up my name, Steve Gamlin, G-A-M-L-I-N. You can find me there.
And any final messages you want to leave the listeners today?
This is one I share often, and it was actually inspired by a little Yorkie Pomeranian that Tina and her mother had adopted. He was a rescue in 2009. His name was Super Teddy, and I wrote a book. Well, he wrote a book. I just did all the work because he was the face of this little mission. And one of the chapters basically said, wake up every day and wag yourself happy, which means when you get up in the morning, listen to some positive music if that gets your day going. If you like to laugh, have some videos you like to go find on YouTube. If your faith is an important part of your life, read something from whatever your good book may be. Don't just get up and grumble and listen to political talk radio or watch the news, because that's all negative stuff right out of the gate. Put something positive in your mind, in your heart, in your soul, in your stomach. Choose positive foods to put in and listen to positive things that inspire you. So wake up every day, wag yourself happy, and start from there.
Awesome. Steve, I want to thank you for joining us today. And for all of those out there listening, we appreciate the words that you gave us today. I know that I'm going to come away with this with a lot more positivity and help myself rebuild out of the ashes. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Anytime. See you next time.